This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Today is July 19th. I'm saying that with a purpose because I've been away. The last three shows, unfortunately, have been taped. I've been kind of busy. I was in and out of town doing some things to expand business, to also had meetings regarding the show, and also was down in Tennessee with my fellow Academy brethren down there in Memphis. The guys I spent some time with 6-7 weeks back in the late winter months, and I joined up the Service Master, which is a national franchise, which has given me more. It's empowered me to do some more things and expand my services on a larger scale. So if you got a little disappointed after, I was almost some guy called me like Johnny Carson. He's like, "What are you like? You're running tape shows now. You're a big shot," and, which is not the case at all. It's just that we got a little busy, and I was doing my day job. And but one of the things that I did like about the three shows was just to bring back in the forefront of the Haiti, because I had a long-standing relationship, radio relationship with the people that were down in Haiti and doing that work with volunteer and nonprofits. And, you know, they're still in the world of a world of trouble down there. So I just wanted to, and I just wanted to bring it back up into the light. And also with Japan, with our shows regarding Japan, I wanted to put that out there again. You know, Wanda with Jim Arnett and Bruce Loberg calling in from 2:30 in the morning, calling in from Japan, and him trying to get into the hot zone, getting supplies up there. Just wanted to get the on the boots ground feeling and on how it was. Because again, you know, the world is the world. I keep on saying the world is flat. You know, with communication and transportation. 3,000 miles away is just a couple hours away, and we're all in this thing together. So, you know, and again, it comes down to economics, and the show's not about that. I'm not even going down the path, but you can see the delay with products that we import from Japan. And you can equate that directly to with the Mississippi floodings, with the Mississippi being the main artery in this country, basically for goods up and down the from north to south. Things weren't being delivered, things weren't being produced. You know, supply and demand. You know, so less things on the shelf, the price goes up. You know, it's like the oil, which is that's a conspiracy anyway, but that's for someone else to talk about on CNBC. Again, like I said, been away doing those things, and also down in with Memphis with the convention. It's hot down there. It was hot last week, and that weather has now moved up into the Midwest. The whole country's baking right now like a potato, but more so up in the Midwest than it happened last year. I think in the Chicago area, too, over 100 people died, but. I saw some of the Twitters and that social media stuff that I got involved in. You know, there's cooling centers, so we're pretty hot here. I mean, it's not crazy, but you should be on the lookout. Especially drinking the fluids, and that's my public service announcement for today. So with that said, a couple other things. On the news front of it, if anyone was reading the paper this past weekend with the National Flood Insurance, now obviously. We're getting more flood activity up here in our Bergen County area, like the island and Westchester. National Flood Insurance. It's basically underwritten by FEMA. And it's a National Flood Insurance program, and so what they did was I'm getting a mic stuck in my face a little more. What Congress did is they passed the HR 1309. This is kind of boring stuff, but it's really important stuff because. They're throwing another $3 billion into the mix to the coffers for next year and so on and so forth. It is adding debt to it. The Treasury is underwriting those numbers, is my understanding. But I'm bringing it up because a lot of people didn't listen to the message last year when we had the March storms. This year, the same people I visited, some of them, were due diligent and they re-upped their insurance and made sure they had their flood insurance. Again, it's kind of a boring subject, but it needs to be said. You got to take a look. You got to call your broker. You got to call your insurance agent, whomever. is on whoever you have your insurance with. Again, it seems boring. It's summertime. It's a drought time. You're not thinking about floods, but this is what the show is about. It's about being prepared. On the property side, whether it's the and also the business side with business continuity, and you know, again, it's like a public service announcement. That's what you know, we'll try to get out there on the airwaves, and we're doing a good job of it. The show's got some good traction. The social media is a great tool. Met some good people out there in you know, internet land, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a real techie guy, but. A lot of interesting people with some ideas. You know, the country is kind of divided in quarters, and what we think as an emergency, not what we think is an emergency, how we are prepared for an emergency here is not necessarily the same in the Midwest or the far West or even out on the West Coast. So I'm getting some good intel on the you know, what do we do here in the East, and this is what we do in the West, and because you have different type of you know, we don't have the crazy wildfires like the West has, and how that you know, as I was looking at a documentary a couple of nights ago about the Oakland Hills, and like 3,500 homes were torched up in an afternoon, the winds kicked up, jumped the highway, and you know, whole neighborhoods were gone. So it's, you know, we have the nor'easters. Those guys have wildfires. They have earthquakes. But it's all part of the preparedness world. Some of my friends on the law enforcement side and first responder side, and some other people that I've been very fortunate to meet on the government side about you know, giving me ideas and information which I can, you know, which I'm really regurgitating. Because this year alone, we've exceeded any year in history of the money we spent out globally. We're something at, I think it's $210 billion. So that's only half a year. So we still have half a year to go. So that's pretty amazing when you consider. And it's a large part is it because of the tsunami and the earthquake in Japan. God knows that was, I think, God, I don't know. Maybe that was 210 billion. Not to say that's a small number, but you know, when we throw billions and millions around in this country, it seems like it's nickels and pennies. But with that said, I'm going to go to a break. I got my first guest is a person who just experienced a fire. I wanted to get his personal feelings on you know, me. For me, it's a job. I come out after the first responders do their business, and I come out and I minimize damage, and you know, I try to put people's lives back together the best of my ability. And I think I'm pretty good at it. But we're gonna go to a break, and we'll talk to George in a bit. Thanks.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Welcome back, Disaster Recovery Hour. Your host, Chris Plunkett. You know, just before I went to the break, and I mentioned the numbers about globally, the economic dollar-wise, it's actually $265 billion. And the reason I'm saying that is because, the tsunami and the earthquake, you put in the twisters, you put in, Down Under, they had their earthquake and their floods. You know, those are large chunks of dollars. But here's an interesting stat, though. We average in our country about $11.8 billion a year in economic losses, insurable losses. We're at $27 billion, and that's only what we're at July 17th. So what I'm trying to kind of tie in is, you can't do anything about tornadoes and preparedness, and I didn't think it's going to come in and rip a place everything apart. It's nuts. It's insane. But there's that other thing of the smaller losses, $20,000, $30,000 here and stuff. Can you pick up tools and tips, from the show, or even searching the web for any information like that to offset those kind of numbers? Because you're part of that $27 billion. So, with that said, I'm going to move in. George, on the phone.
Yes. Hi.
How are you, George? I unfortunately met George this past holiday weekend. George had a fire at his home, and George and I kind of. What George does for a living, and he's a very hands-on individual. And what I always wanted to do for the show was I always wanted to get the person who had the disaster in their home. I always wanted to get their effect because I come in after the fact, and I'm there to do a job. And yes, I take how they're feeling, the psychological matters, and so on and so forth. But I always wanted somebody to talk, and I thought George was a perfect candidate because he's to the point. He can describe the situations thoroughly. George, you had the fire at your home. Thank God nobody was hurt, but you were not home, and so we'll just pick it up like from the beginning. You're at work, you get the phone call, and how did you receive the news?
Actually, I was driving home, and I got a call from the tenant on the third floor saying your house is on fire. And as a matter of fact, while I was driving home, one of the fire trucks that was racing to the fire, I had to pull over to the side and let them go with the siren blaring and all that.
Right. Did you automatically take it as a serious information or like,
I took it as very, very serious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, again, because I'm always coming in after the fact. So you get the call, you pull over, you let the first responders zip on by, which is definitely the right thing to do. What's going through your mind at that point?
How bad is it going to be? Is my whole house going to be burned down? I have two dogs. Fortunately, they were in the backyard. Are they going to be okay? What's it going to take to get this right? Have to reach out for the insurance company, let them know. Who should I call among my friends? Maybe somebody to give me moral support and maybe give me some, advice about what I should do next. And, those are all the thoughts that were racing through my mind. And from when I got the call to when I arrived at the fire, was maybe 10 minutes, something like that, because I was pretty close to being home when I got the call.
So call number one went to whom?
I think the first two people I called were two very close friends of mine. I won't give their full names, but sure. Their names were Alex and Juan, and I called them up, and I'm fortunate that both of them said, George, we'll come right down, and we'll be there and do whatever we can for you. The next thing I did was I irritated the police a little bit because... you know, I want to go and talk to the firemen and,
right,
and ask them questions, you know, and the police say, no, sir, I know it's your house, but you have to stay over here. And you know, you see the firemen with their, you know, knocking holes in your house, you know, from the outside and with the hoses, you know, and the water coming out the windows. So you know that there's going to be a lot of water damage, not only fire and smoke damage. And, you know, it's very, very upsetting. You know, I would say it's like after a death in the family or, you know, a divorce in terms of how upsetting it is.
Yeah. Which kind of what you said about, you know, trying to break the line, get into the firemen and talk to them. It's my next guest. He'll be talking about that. Have you had any similar experiences to draw on?
No, never had. I never had a fire before.
Flood?
I never had, I had some small flooding, but I really don't think I've had a similar experience to this, no.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you're on the scene. Now, there's another responsibility besides you having your two dogs. So you have tenants.
Right. Actually, it was the upstairs tenant. They called me, and when I had spoken to him, he was, you know, already safe. He had just left the house. And I saw him outside when I came there, and I asked him, you know, there were two students who lived there, and he said no. You know, the other his roommate was, you know, not at home, so he was the only person in the house at the time of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so the next thing that happened is the community liaison for the fire department came up to me to make sure I'd have a home for the night, and I said sure, you know, I wasn't going to be homeless. And and then the fire department's arson investigator, you know, he comes up to you and tells you he's going to be looking into the cause of the fire, and he'll report back to you. And he says, you know, they'll let you know, the fire chief, whether or not, or fire commander, will let you know whether or not you can spend the night there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, answering those questions and kind of sorting that out, you know, takes the remainder of the time that the fire department was putting out the fire. And fortunately, they said yes, you can spend the night there. It's not like you were saying it's unsafe for habitation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you know, and then you go and you look at all the damage, and you know, you just your I don't know, you just your whole insides feel like you know, just I don't know, they just you just feel horrible. You feel like you feel nauseous. Like you wanna,
yes.
It's very, very upsetting.
Yeah.
Fortunately, by then, I think my friends had come, you know, so I said, George, you know, it will, you know, sort itself out. Nobody was hurt. And then you start to try and get what do I have to do mode. So
mm-hmm.
And I think I did the right thing. I immediately tried to reach my insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a few calls, I was able to leave a message with the on-call person from the insurance company. And, then there are people who follow the airwaves or radio waves, and they know about fires, you know, and they show
scanners,
up.
Scanners, right, board ups.
Right, and one of those companies came by, and the guy said, listen, I'm here if you want to get the place boarded up. And I spoke to some of the firemen, and they said, well, that's very good, good thing to do, because if it rains, as it turned out, it did rain that weekend, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can get a lot of water damage.
Right, secondary damage.
And you know, I told the guy to hang around because I wanted to speak to the insurance company. I didn't want to just start making decisions left and right on my own, though I do believe, having looked at my policy since then, that if it's an emergency service like that, you're kind of authorized to go ahead and hire somebody to do it, and the insurance company doesn't require you to wait until they get back.
Right, yeah, some of that verbiage inside those contracts, your policies, is, you know, you're to do the best to minimize and mitigate further damage. And it makes a good point, because a lot of people that I've gone to on the jobs, they don't realize that they're just kind of waiting, and they don't need to wait. So that's why I'm always beating a dead horse by saying, you know, look at your policy, and, you know, get to know your agent, get to know your broker, get to know the fire chief. You know, those guys got a slew of information. If you just joined us at the Disaster Recovery Hour, if you want to call in, if you want to go to the website, the phone number is 1-800-962-1160, and also drhradio.net. You could listen to us live. You can throw out a question on the comments page, and be more than happy. I do have a quick question already from Michelle, and she's a pet lover. Feels that every home should have sign or a decal in the window saying "pet lives here" or something to that effect. Yeah, and Michelle, you know, that's the preparedness. You know, for me, it's, you know, I'm in this business. You know, George does something else, and you know, it's a constant fight of what, you know, the what ifs, what could happen, and being prepared for those things. So you said you had looked at the policy, and you know, you're able to move forward. So you stayed in that night, and your next step is you have work to do. You have a job. What happens with that?
Well, just to back up a moment, if that's okay.
Sure.
I was pleased. The insurance company called me back, and then I put the insurance company, you know, I handed the phone over to that first responder board up guy,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke together, and then the on-call guy at my insurance company authorized him not only to board up the place, but to mop it up, you know, clean out the water, mm-hmm. and to take out debris, and they must have taken out somewhere, but let's say 40, you know, 30-gallon bags of debris. So they had a crew that night there from like 8:30 to 2:30 in the morning, you know, boarding it up and cleaning out all that debris and like I said, mopping up the water. And I think that was a very good move, not only because, you know, it prevents further damage, but psychologically, to see all that debris out of your house, to know that it's boarded up and, you know, that the water's been mopped out, just makes you feel a little bit better, like, okay, I'm getting things done, I'm moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the claims adjuster called me the next day from the insurance company, and he set up an appointment for the next day, which was Sunday. And that's when I met you, because you came there with him, and you began to describe the process of cleaning the air and dehumidifying the house and putting in big fans and air scrubbers and how a lot of plaster from ceilings and walls had to be knocked out because it was too soaked. And then it took about another 3 days with, you know, I would say 10 guys there, at least the first 2 days, maybe three the third day, to clean everything up and dry out the house and get the smoke smell out of the house. And then after that, you feel like, well, the situation stabilized. The house is it's not going to have any more damage, and it's not like you're walking around through debris. It didn't smell anymore. So then, you know, I felt like now I have to move on to the next step, which is to get the claims adjuster to get their contractor down there and put a number on how much it's going to cost to fix. Get my contractor in and then negotiate, resolution of the matter.
Sure.
But I think that beginning process, those first few days of clean, you know, boarding up the house, and then afterwards having the cleanup crew get in there and clean the air, and you actually called in a company, as I recall, to dry clean a lot of the clothing and whatnot, to get that smoke out of clothing and furniture and whatnot. I think that's so crucial.
Man, you know, it's, you know, and I'm listening to you, it's this is great intel, because it's really firsthand, people listening. This is how it should be done, as in, George being the insured here, and he grasped it, you know, taking little bites, because you, like you said, you know, you leave debris around. There are some people, and Captain Dan and Chief Fedorchek, who was on the show about 6-7 months ago, they're up here in Bergen County, and they're on fire departments. You know, it's a lot of homeowners are just kind of sit there on their front lawn as the fire trucks, you know, go away. And they're just kind of left there, and they, you know, because obviously they had a flood or they had a fire or a tree went through the house, you know, when we had the winds and so on and so forth, and they're not thinking straight, you know, so I was very fortunate, because you were on top of your game when I first met you, but there is the process and the preparedness and the recovery of it and the restoration of it, it just eats up time. And, you know, it's almost like doggy years, because, you know, one day for you could be, you know, it seems like a month that, you want to get back to normal. And normal, where do we want to be? You know, you want to go back, you want to go back to your job, you want to go to your right restaurants and so on and so forth. So out of the experience, you're moving forward. What would be some of the things you would recommend for some of our listeners?
I would say call up some friends who you respect and who are, you're close to, and get them down there to offer you some emotional support and guidance. Call up the insurance company and try to speak to somebody as quickly as possible. When those guys show up who do the board-up work, try and get them to speak to somebody at your insurance company and not just board up the house, but board it up, mop it up, and start carrying out the debris. And then when you speak to your claims adjuster, hopefully the next day, tell them, have a cleanup guy down here with you. Let me meet your, you know, let me meet the guy that you want. And you might think, oh, don't go with anybody that the insurance company's recommending because maybe they're not 100% on your side. But at these early stages, I disagree with that. You know, they know the business. They know the professionals. They'll feel comfortable working with that guy. And you want one of those guys in there and bring in his crew and clean it out with the air and the smoke and dehumidify the house. And I think that's crucial. Those first few days, get everything that you can done to clean out the air, dehumidify the property so you don't have water or mold damage. Get all the debris out of the house so you feel you can walk around and feel a little more comfortable. You feel like things are getting done. And then once you reach that point, which maybe takes about 3, 4, 5 days a week, then you settle in and you say, okay, now I got to make my repairs. And that can take a little bit longer. I want, you know, my insurance company to tell me what they think it's worth. I'm going to get my own guy to tell me what I think it's worth. And then we'll come to a number and, you know, we'll get the house repaired. But I do think the thing that I've learned is that first few days is really crucial to get somebody in there to board up your house and then really clean up your house and get it done soon and get it done right away. Don't allow any more damage to your house and help your own psychology so that you feel better and stronger about making the next decision you got to make.
Which is what we had a conversation with a guy, not a guy, one of my guests a couple months ago, and it was about that psychological, and you were working with downtown after the towers went down. But you know what? Everyone's disaster. It doesn't matter the severity of it. You know, it's each, everybody's individualist along those lines. You know, the small water damage is just as big as a house fire. There is a question from Andrew regarding, it said, would you be, what would he do differently with his insurance policy? I don't know. Do you have a, you're pretty satisfied with how the insurance played out on your...
Up until this point, yeah, I think, we're going back 2 weeks. So for the first 2 weeks, I think my insurance company has done a fair job.
That's good. That's good. Georgia, you know what? I thought it was, I thought having you speak and you're articulate and you're able to get the message out on the procedures and your expectations and also your psychological part about it. You're right. You know, looking at debris is not the right thing to wait around for the insurance carrier. You know, due diligence, mitigate, move forward. And most insurance companies, they're not out there to hurt you. They really want, they want you whole because, you know what, they want your premiums. So that's the bottom line. You've been listening to this little segment. It's a Disaster Recovery. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. George, I really appreciate your time today. Enjoy your lunch hour, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Let's go to a station break. Like I said, that was George, and that was a good experience for the show and for the listeners. Be right back. Pay a couple bills. See ya.
Disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition. Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next? Fire, smoke, water, or mold? CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
The money is all dried up, and the work is all gone. Don't want
attorney Michael Guidreau is the cure for your bankruptcy blues. With a bankruptcy success rate of nearly 100%, Michael Guidreau is an expert in bankruptcy, credit card settlement, and loan modification. For a consultation, call 201-837-7777. 201-837-7777. Call today and get rid of your bankruptcy blues.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least one in four businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room, talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to Ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Disaster Recovery Hour. Your host, Chris Plunkett. That's drhradio.net if you wanted to shoot out a question to us. You know what about past shows, today's show, my upcoming guest? Also, there's a phone number. It's 800-962-1160. That is 1-800-962-1160. And again, those call signs are drhradio.net. I do have a quick question before I go to Joe. Ty, it says, how was the fire started and was this investigated? They're all investigated. I do not know what came of that investigation. We did get a clearance. The fire marshal gave up his paperwork, and everything was it's also a third party also looked at it. So as far as, you know, for me, I don't get involved in that part of the investigation. I'm the mitigator, I'm the cleanup guy. But there was no suspicion. If that's can help you out. With that said, we're gonna go with my next guest. I met Joyello at the symposium out in Long Island for the ACP of Long Island, and we've been talking a lot about business continuity because businesses pay a lot of taxes, and that's a tax break. That's the tax coffers, if you will. Joe, you there?
I'm here.
How are you? Everything all right?
Everything's fine.
Good.
How are you?
Good, good, good. Joe is the Director of Program Development at CEES. Now, CEES stands for Corporate Emergency Access System. So we go with CEES as the call signs for mine. And it was developed to help address the new set of realities that we have out there, which is prevent credentials in the program that allow critical business employees to gain access to restricted areas following a disaster or serious emergency by using secure identification card recognized by the police. And this is the world we live in, Joe, right? And I was just talking with George in the line about him trying to talk to the firemen, and the police are, you know, saying, listen, that's a homeowner. It's a little different, but with businesses, it's not. I mean, this is there's a lot behind that. So why don't we pick up from the beginning on CEES and its how it got it developed and where is it driving, and we'll go rock and roll from there.
Sure. Well, CEES was developed out of a federal study back in 1999, and the business that was that resulted from this federal study, which was the Joint Loss Reduction Partnership, was the Business Network of Emergency Resources, incorporated. And BNET, we will refer to it as BNET, is a not-for-profit 501c6 corporation. And basically, the JLRP was a private sector study done by FEMA to find out what were the impediments to businesses recovering, mitigating from disasters. And even, you know, much like it would be with the homeowner, businesses, you know, it's tenfold, and even more so in most cases. But the JLRP said, you know, what were those impediments? And those impediments really boiled down to a couple things. Resources, communication, and access. Access being number one. Since that time, CEES was developed by BNET, and basically CEES is an access control system which pre-authenticates critical. Well, you got to qualify that as critical private sector employees. Those employees who are critical to the survivability of their company and are needed in the event that a disaster or serious emergency strikes.
Now, I kind of put the horse before the cart here because I know Joe and I need to set up you a little better than I did. Sorry, because we jumped right into it. Because I just think about when we spent time and the enthusiasm you had about this program, and I was jumping on board with you. But Joe was 25 years in law enforcement. He was retired as a lieutenant up in the Syracuse area, city manager for Fulton. Joe's got an extensive background for private and corporate. I'm sorry, private and public. Emergency management planning. Your degree in law enforcement coupled with a minor in computers, and that's where this is a software type of program driven for the identification purposes. And then you're also a consultant with the SUNY and research at the foundation to assist with the small and local governments. So, you know, I kind of jumped a little forward, but I want to set the table properly for Joe because he definitely deserves this format so people understand where you're coming from. And this is the life that we're going forward in, having access to business. I want to talk about and how people can really sink their teeth into it, because you're going to have what would you call it, a dry run or something like that, a couple weeks before 9/11.
Oh yeah, we were to bring up some horror stories. We were we had the software developed from 2000 to 2001. It was a year of development, and we actually were ready to go to pilot in Lower Manhattan. And then the executive director for BNet, which is Pete Piccirillo, and I apologize, he couldn't be here today because he had to get to Washington earlier than he anticipated, so he thought he'd be able to do this and then hop the train and get to Washington, but he wasn't able to.
Okay.
And Peter's retired out of NYPD. He's our executive director. I met Peter through this program on the development side with the software.
Hmm.
At that point, as things progressed through the years, BNet moved on to begin to hire its own people in-house. And the natural course of that was to hire those people that were most familiar with the program, most familiar with the software, and I was one of them. And our senior developer and now the CTO was another person that was brought along. So that's kind of the background on you know, my association with the program. And yes, I'm excited about the program because it's one of those few programs that provides a couple things that I, from the public sector side, and then more recently, from 96 on, the private sector side saw the opportunity, as Pete did, because Pete developed was very instrumental in developing private public-private partnerships for New York City. It became the first stepping stone for me to say, you know, this is and these are basically became the key points of C's. It's a partnership. It provides identification. It provides access. It addresses resiliency and security. And those key points are really the main focus of the program. The partnership is between the local government. It has to be adopted by local government through our MOU.
Mm-hmm.
So we negotiate that with the local government. It's a pre-event system. So at the time of an event, you can't go in and register. You can. But, you know, it could be a 2 to 4 week to 6 week process, depending on how big your organization is, how much legal mumbo jumbo you have to go through. And so it is a pre-event system, and it pre-authenticates those critical employees.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, you know who owns the pizzeria or the coffee shop or the bagel store or whatever. Like, you know what, if you want him to go through the line, okay, you need to go get your cash register maybe. But we're talking about important employees, you know, critical data information, whether things need to be, if let's just say the offsite data host, you know, that also is in failure. You know, things need, critical employees need to get in and address those situations. So having that plan in place already, instead of having a mob going up to an area, a secured zone, it offsets that hysteria and that mob mentality. And that's what I was grabbing out of the season. I thought, wow, that's, you know, I know they have it in certain areas, but they don't, it's not, you know, you coming from 25 years in law enforcement, you know, people used to come up to you and try to break the line all the time. So,
And the common answer was, get out of here.
Yeah, right. You know,
or you get into an argument, and then you have to push and people push the limits, and one thing leads to another, and basically, you have to draw the line because of what's going on. This system stops that because it's already in place. It requires police acknowledgement of it through an order of the day, a memorandum to the officers at the time of an incident.
Mm-hmm.
So that the beat patrol cops, the radio patrol cars, know if they're at a checkpoint what to look for. Now, you know, we hear time and again in this program that, you know, I talked to my brother-in-law. He's a cop. He's in the 17th precinct, and he knows nothing about the program. And that's perfectly legitimate. That's and it's probably true. But the plan is in place. All the mechanisms are in place from the emergency management of New York City. Commissioner Bruno, everybody down the line has the program in their plan, their operational plan. And once it gets activated, then the cards become legitimate. So we notify our users after being notified by the most recent activation was Buffalo, South Buffalo, for the snowstorm last year.
Mm-hmm.
We received notification from the mayor's office. We activated our system. Our plan kicks into gear, and then we notify all of our users in Buffalo first, and then the surrounding areas that might have been impacted, or system wide, because you may have, like, M&T has headquarters in Buffalo, but you know they got branches all over the Northeast.
Right. You know, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about if you guys are trying to get, 25 years in law enforcement has helped you get into some doors and explain, this is the situation I experienced when I was on the job and being in upper management as a lieutenant. But I want to talk about the government side of it, because I know, like, for example, you know, school teachers and things like that, you know, do you need to get in? I know the principal, is it being implemented in the smaller communities, or are we staying larger? Let's go to a break. DRHradio.net is the webpage. Throw in some comments. Go to a break, and be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. sparkies.com or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Let me repeat. At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster.
You have five new messages.
Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for the presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stanton proposes due.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
To save your messages, press 1.
Received dispatch. Truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47. Heavy fire showing from the 9th floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable, but when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. here at WVNJ 1160 AM, The Voice. If you wanted to call, it's 1-800-962-1160. I think I got that right, Dave. And also drhradio.net. And you can comment, you know, on the podcast if you listen to it, you know, on Saturday morning when you're having your coffee, and I hope you do that. I know some of the people I've gotten some information about being a little disappointed with 3 weeks straight about taping, or reruns, I should say, so I apologize that. So, Joe, where we picked up, let's pick up where we left off. I was thinking about smaller governments, like municipalities. Is that a target, or is it, let's say, half a million? We're looking for large cities, and, you know, since we all live here in the New York City area, we use this as the yardstick, but are we moving in that direction also with C's?
Well, C's. The C's program is really targeted towards urban areas. So larger populations, it can be used in rural areas without a problem. But the recognition and the need, and again, we're not for profit, so we don't have the resources to stretch out.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, the larger urban areas are where we're at. Boston, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Buffalo, the county around Buffalo, Erie, Long Island.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, Rockland, Westchester, we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
Right on up from New York, all the counties have been working on those.
No, I think yes, go on.
Yeah, one thing I didn't mention before is, you know, we talk about the C's program, but the question that probably some of your listeners are asking is, well, how does this actually work?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, the program is targeted toward, is actually for private sector businesses to mitigate damage and loss resulting from disaster or emergency, simply by allowing and raising the level of access to those people who have the credentials. So it allows emergency access, and these people are all signing off from liabilities to the local jurisdiction, which is what makes the jurisdiction say, yeah, this is a good program, because now we don't have to worry about liabilities associated
right,
with letting
right.
somebody in before it's ready for, you know, the whole population to come in and back to normal. But this mitigates and allows people to go in, and the mitigation process begins as quickly as possible, as opposed to waiting for the complete cleanup and restoration of services.
Right. No, that's great. The breaking it down that way. Yeah, you know what? Because our country is, whether you like it or not, it's litigious, and we're always looking to point fingers, and it's never somebody else's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. So, and it's really for the better of a community, you know, to keep businesses up and running and quickly turn around and, you know, start generating dollars. Economics, it's plain and simple.
Well, true. It's business economics as far as, you know, I get my business back up and running. I've got, you know, I have to worry about, from the business side, revenues. I have to worry about reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to worry about employees. And you know, if you're paying employees, they're out buying and paying for services and paying taxes.
Right.
So it makes all the perfect sense to get them up and running as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So we try to get the government to think of it as mitigation, not after the disaster, but in parallel with. You go in, and then those jurisdictions that have our program realize that the sooner, you know, if this is going to be a prolonged event, if it's a serious enough event, we'll activate the program as soon as life safety issues have been resolved.
Right, life safety, correct, right. You know, has, you know, between you and Pete, has it been an easier inroad because of first responder experience and being on the job? Whether, you know, it's, I don't know if you have any firemen also in the mix with your guys, with your employment, but has it been easier because you've seen it on the public side? Now you're saying, okay, listen, we need to synergistic. We need to make these things mesh properly. Is that have been advantageous for people to say, okay, I'll listen?
Yes, most definitely it has been. Yeah. It definitely opens the door for us. It's you know, you can speak the language. They know you understand what they're going through.
Right.
There are some trust factors. Mm-hmm. There are some things that they know you understand, and what we're trying, the case we try to make is to say, you know, this partnership that creates the local bond between the business community and the local and the local government. Has a strong purpose, and that is to mitigate the impact of disasters and speed the recovery.
Mm.
But what's really important about the program is they can then build upon that. When you get people sitting down at a table and talking about this program, there's other things that can be built out, and then people begin to see it rather quickly. So if there isn't a public-private partnership in the region. And there's a lot of ways of having public-private partnerships, and you know, and I don't want to be a cynic about it, but there's jurisdictions that claim they have public-private partnerships that are one way, and that is, you know, they bring the private sector in, sit down, and tell them what they're doing, and
right.
You know, give them a cup of coffee, and off they go. that's rather cynical,
right?
But it isn't meant to berate or belittle. It's the way things have been accepted and done. And that's not in every jurisdiction. There are many jurisdictions that are miles ahead of others in regards to this. And when you get into the rural areas, of course, the resources are minimal, so you tend to find that to
right.
be the case.
That not a bad mentality, but a mentality nonetheless. And Rick Gimbel said that, you know, the OEM director there at ISLIP. He's, you know, coming from, you know, FDNY guy for 20-some-odd years, and for him to talk the way he was talking about, you know, we have to get together on this thing, you know, because and FEMA's put it out there in Homeland Security about, you know, we're not going to be there. You know, you gotta small government or, you know, and business got to meet together, got to partner up and make this thing happen because, you know, Daddy Warbucks, FEMA's not going to be just writing checks for everybody. It's just not going to happen, you know.
Well, we can see that with the current talks in Washington. That money is going to dry up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not going to be the. There's going to be other limitations that really draw down those funds quicker, and that's because the pile's smaller and the requirements to get that money is going to be tougher.
Yeah, it's
so having said it, you know, to mitigate as quickly as possible as positive impacts for everyone.
Yeah. Joe, I appreciate you taking. I know you left the meeting. You're en route to going to another meeting. I appreciate you calling in for me. When you're back down in the city, if we can, I don't know, in New York, or want to see Pete also. I know he's down. What, he's taking the train down to D.C. or something. I appreciate your time. And again, you know, getting the word out of business and the social media about preparedness and, you know what, business continuity. We you know, stay in the business to do business, you know. Again, Joe, I appreciate it. I know you're on the road doing some windshield time. Appreciate the call in, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Chris, if I could just direct everybody to our website.
Yeah.
www.cs.com.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry, but go for it.
Yeah, www.cs.com. The front page gives you a whole bunch of information. If you need to get more information, you can email support@cs.com or call 1-888-353-2638. That's 1-888-353-DNET.
I'm going to. Bill's got both connections on my website, so they can just click on and rock over to you.
Beautiful.
Guys. Yeah. Again, I'll talk to you soon, and safe driving. Be safe.
Thank you.
Take care. My guest today, George, no last name, we'll just leave it anonymous, calling in on regarding his experience with the fire, and also just hanging up with Joe Anello, the director of program development for SEAS. You know, it sounds big stuff, but you know what? It's really not. I mean, doing urban, I understand that. But there's a lot of stuff that can be trickled down and be understood on a smaller scale standpoint. A couple questions. I might have to answer those questions on the website, but I want to talk about the World Police and Fire Games in 2011. It's happening late August, early September. Go to Google and punch in World Police and Fire Games. Joe Brozzi out of the Bronx, he's the coordinator of this. There's 90 countries getting involved. I'm going to talk about it a little more next week. We ran out of time today, but it's the anniversary of 9/11, and you can donate money. You can go out to the games. It's like the Olympics. They got a ton of stuff, different events, which guys are competing and women are competing, so on and so forth. But again, it's the just go Google World Police and Fire Games 2011. It comes up for New York City. A quick question. We got George. I said, did George use his own contractor or his insurance company guy? It's recommended, George, in those fields just to start moving the process. When it comes to estimates for repair work, this is back to George Summers before we sign off here. You're entitled to use whoever you want. When it comes to emergency services, the insurance company likes to get you up and running quicker than later. I got a question from Steve. Since I was going to ask how the program works, how you study the mistakes of Katrina. Steve, put that out. I'm gonna send that question over to Joe. He can answer that for you. I'm glad I'm back. It's 3 weeks. Jump in, you know, questions. You can podcast, sign up for it, drhradio.net. Go to the website, comments page, and sign up for the podcast. Thanks a lot. And I guess that's it. And we'll see you next week. Take care.